It is Friday, July 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Afghan Taliban announce a new leader. Beijing is chosen to host the 2022 Olympic Winter Games.
And now it actually has become the first city to host both the Winter and Summer Olympics.
And we look at the career of singer-songwriter Tori Kelly. It's all ahead. The Afghan Taliban announced Friday that its Shura, or Supreme Council, has chosen Mullah Akhtar Mansour as the new chief of the Afghan insurgent group, a day after confirming reports of the death of its founder, Mullah Omar. Friday's announcement in the Pashto language was emailed to VOA by Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mujahideen. I spoke with reporter Ayaz Gould in Islamabad about the announcement. Is it known why Mansour was chosen for this position?
Well, there are several reasons, and the primary reason is that Mullah Akhtar Mansour, since 2010, has been leading the Taliban's political and military affairs on behalf of Mullah Omar, and was also his deputy leader of the Islamic Taliban. So because he was dealing directly with the field commanders, those who are waging the insurgency against the foreign forces and Afghan government in Afghanistan, he was in direct contact and passing on instructions to the field commanders and the fighters. Obviously, he had developed a very close relationship with those who are waging the insurgency. And secondly, he is actually the driving force behind this nascent Afghan peace process that had just begun, like earlier this month in Pakistan, when the government here hosted the Taliban delegation and the Kabul government delegation for the opening round of the peace talks. And it was even publicly acknowledged by the Afghan delegation after the talks that it was Mullah Akhtar Mansour at whose approval the Taliban delegation, a powerful delegation, showed up at the talks. So leading the fight in Afghanistan and then dealing with the political negotiations, Mullah Omar, you know, apparently was on top of these two major things.
However, in a way, Mullah Omar was almost sort of a legendary and very sort of feared figure. There have been reports that within the Taliban that perhaps it might splinter. Does Mansour have the same kind of backing that Mullah Omar had?
No, that is clearly, I mean, one can say without any doubt that there's a lot of difference between, you know, the stature of the two leaders. Mullah Omar obviously was the founder, and not only that, he was considered as the leader of the Taliban movement, but he was also known as a prominent religious cleric. So with these two characteristics, obviously Mullah Omar was a different leader, and he was able to keep the movement intact for the last 14 years, despite all those challenges that the Taliban faced. So Mullah Omar, you know, in terms of his abilities to lead the Taliban movement, as I said, that he is good in dealing with the political affairs and the military affairs. But whether he will enjoy the same kind of respect that the Taliban leadership or the Taliban fighters were giving to Mullah Omar, that is still a question. There's a still big question mark, and it will come to know in the next few days whether Mullah Akhtar Mansour has been able to overcome those challenges. But obviously, under his leadership, there's one tradition among the Taliban is that once their shura makes a final decision, the leadership council, once decides that, okay, this is going to be the person leading the Taliban, then it happens that everyone has to come under the same leadership. But obviously, the differences that are being cited within the Taliban movement after this announcement are emerging from the fact that even though Mullah Omar was leading the movement successfully for last 14 years, as a result of this new announcement, his family has practically been sidelined from the movement.
Well, thank you very much, Ayaz.
You're welcome.
That is Ayaz Gul in Islamabad. Well, joining me here in the studio is our social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on today?
Well, there's a lot of talk about the goings-on in the Taliban, the death of Mullah Omar, and then the appointment of new leaders. But there's a lot of questions about the peace talks. They're in doubt currently, people wondering if they will maybe continue in the future, questions about this new leadership, and a lot of people are asking those on social media. So waiting to hear the answers, and as they get them, I'm sure there'll be more reaction that we'll cover into the coming week.
Yeah.
Trending this morning, hashtag Beijing2022 in Kuala Lumpur earlier this morning. The Olympic Committee, International Olympic Committee, awarding the 2022 Winter Games to Beijing, China. A lot of people pointing out on social media there is no snow in Beijing. I think they get on average about 2 inches of snow. A lot of the events are going to be held a couple hours away in the mountains. One poem that someone wrote on Twitter that I quite liked was, roses are red, violets are blue, we don't have snow, but can host it too. A couple of people saying, is Sepp Blatter involved in this? Because it's such an odd choice to pick Beijing without snow. And also notably, this will be the third consecutive Olympics that will be in Asia. The 2018 Winter Games will be in Pyongyang, South Korea. The 2020 Summer Games will be in Tokyo. And then 2022 will be in Beijing. So a lot of strong reaction about that. Interesting, Beijing was only one of two cities to bid, the other Almaty, Kazakhstan. And there's actually people pointing out a very close vote, 44 to 40 votes. So Beijing barely squeaking it out. But more to follow on that for sure in the next, 7 years until that Olympics?
Yes.
Sure, there'll be a lot of talk on that. And then, of course, we've been following the story all week. Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe,
yes,
killed by Walter Palmer, who's an American dentist, paid $55,000 to track and hunt this protected lion. And the social media reaction has just been vicious as people are saying that he is for killing this lion. Interestingly, it's not just reaction on social media from celebrities. People are actually going to this dentist's Yelp page, which is a website to review businesses, giving his dentist practice 1-star reviews. One person saying, he lured me into his dental practice, then shot me with a bow and arrow. So a lot of very snarky comments about that. Somebody also made a parody Twitter account for his dental office, saying, we need less negativity in picturing a lion attacking a zebra. It looks like they're hugging. It says, we need more positive vibes like this picture. A lot of people thinking it's actually his dental practice, but no, it's a parody making fun of him.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
For the first time, astronomers have discovered the chemical element lithium within material ejected by a bright nova or exploding star located in the constellation Centaurus. The team made their discovery through observations of Nova Centauri 2013 with telescopes at the European Southern Observatory's La Silla Observatory near Santiago, Chile. According to the researchers, their discovery may help explain why so many young stars have more of this element than is expected. The discovery may also provide clues to astronomers who are trying to understand the chemical elements that make up the stars in our Milky Way. Scientists say lithium happens to be one of the few chemical elements that were created by the Big Bang some 13.8 billion years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about singer-songwriter Tori Kelly. Well, as we heard earlier, the International Olympic Committee has chosen Beijing to host the 2022 Winter Olympic Games. It made that decision over Almaty, Kazakhstan, the only other contender in the bid for this increasingly expensive event. IOC President Thomas Bach announced the decision Friday during the committee's 128th session in Kuala Lumpur. Beijing hosted the Summer Olympics in 2008 and says it will reuse many of those venues for the Winter Games. Kazakhstan has never hosted an Olympics. I spoke with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide about the decision. What has been the reaction in the Chinese capital to this news?
Well, as you would imagine, it's a situation of everyone is ecstatic about the decision. They've been waiting and hoping that this decision would go their way, that they would Beijing would have a second chance to host an Olympic Games, and now it actually has become the first city to host both the Winter and Summer Olympics. And there were scores of elderly women gathered outside the Bird's Nest. Obviously, it seems very heavily organized, and at the Great Wall as well. I'm sure there are people that went to those sites as well that, of their own accord, because they're just happy that China has another opportunity to host a big event on the international stage. So everyone's happy and they're excited about this. There's a lot of enthusiasm, I would think, especially among those who are involved in winter sports here, which is kind of a long played a second fiddle to summer games and summer sports, other sports like basketball and things that are more popular. So it's going to give a huge boost to that, to sports like ice hockey, skating, skiing, of course, is already growing here. And I think it will continue to see tremendous growth because of this decision.
How did China and Chinese officials campaign for Beijing to be selected to host this Winter Olympics?
Well, like everything else, they put everything into it, and they made a very convincing case. Obviously, the committee felt that was the case, and they've put a lot of energy into presenting this. It's really quite amazing what they've done. I mean, because they've sold a city. They've helped a city win the bid for the Winter Olympic Games. It really doesn't get a lot of snow at all. And it's also very odd because it has happened before with the Winter Games, but some of the events are going to be hosted in the city, but other events are going to be some 200 kilometers away up in the mountains in Hebei province, which is outside of Beijing. So it's an amazing kind of a PR win that they've been able to pull off. You know, selling this package that I wouldn't think is necessarily, the best fit for the Winter Games, but they've got what they wanted to get.
This decision has been criticized quite a bit by human rights organizations who are calling attention to what they see as China's lack of basic or adequate human rights in regard, to situations like Tibet. To recently, there's the Khorasan crackdown on human rights lawyers. Has there been any kind of reaction, among officials to those kinds of criticisms?
We haven't really seen that much reaction to that yet. I mean, other than the typical kind of response that you see in the newspapers about criticisms about China's rights records. I think that from this day forward, though, we will see increasing criticism and comments about the Olympics and the bid that they have won, and then we'll see a little bit more of kind of China's responding to that. They have obviously, the Chinese officials have pledged that they will uphold their promises, but this is what they did in the 2008 games, and we've seen that either it's press freedoms or just basic civil rights, the situation is deteriorating. Human Rights Watch argues that the situation now is the worst that it has been in decades in China for rights, and so this sends the International Olympic Committee in its decision is really sending Beijing the wrong message. Those rights activists, though, are still looking or hoping that this will be an opportunity for change, but really the climate right now is terrible for that, whether it's going out and doing reporting work, whether it's rights lawyers trying to defend the rights of average citizens, and now, more than 200 having been called into police and more than a dozen or so still being held. It's not a pretty picture right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Bill.
You're welcome.
That's VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. International investigators have been dispatched to a tiny Indian Ocean island to determine if the plane wreckage that has drifted ashore is from the missing Malaysian Boeing 777 that disappeared last March during a flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. If so, the debris found on Reunion Island could help solve the aircraft's mysterious disappearance with 239 people on board. Zlata Sahok reports.
This piece of wreckage covered in shells and other marine life could be a piece of the Malaysian plane that disappeared 17 months ago on flight MH370. The debris was found Wednesday on Reunion, a French overseas territory in the Western Indian Ocean. Aviation experts are already getting clues from the photographs of the wreckage.
With my team, we just looked at hundreds and thousands of pictures. We just tried to figure out which plane it could belong to. We found only one match. It was the flaperon of a Boeing 777. And not only the shape match, but also all the connections and all the holes that are very specific for this kind of pieces of plane.
And they say the ocean currents could have brought the wreckage to this part of the Indian Ocean.
Finding this piece of debris in Reunion Island is entirely consistent with the current patterns in the southern Indian Ocean to being originated from the area that they're doing the current search for the wreckage at the bottom of the ocean.
Scientists say more pieces of wreckage could be washing up in that region. If the debris proves to be from the missing plane, experts say they may be able to determine why it went down.
We'll be able to look at it, see is there anything like an explosion mark, anything that might tell us why this airplane came down.
The answers may also give closure to the families of the passengers and crew. Zlatica Ho, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Singer-songwriter Tori Kelly is on the verge of a huge breakthrough. Her recent performances on the Billboard and BET Awards shows have created a buzz in pop music. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at Kelly's life, music, and her rise to fame.
You couldn't call Tori Kelly an overnight success. Sure, she's only 22, and she is managed by Scooter Braun, the same man who ignited the careers of pop superstars Ariana Grande and Justin Bieber. But Kelly has been working towards pop stardom and honing her songwriting and singing chops for more than a decade now. The Southern California girl first appeared in public on the talent show Star Search when she was only 10. But her real exposure came from posting videos on YouTube. She gained recognition for her cover with another YouTuber, Angie Girl, of Frank Ocean's ballad, Thinking About You. Eventually, Kelly made her way to American Idol and advanced to the Hollywood round, but she did not make the top 24. That loss inspired Tori to write more of her own material, which eventually made it onto her first EP, Handmade Songs by Tori Kelly. On that, she played many of the instruments and also produced all the tracks.
Even just releasing music in general is, I think, an accomplishment, and the fact that I get to put out a whole album of songs that I just put my whole heart into, and people are responding really well to it. It's like, it's the best feeling in the world, because these are songs about my life too, so it's kind of like I'm just throwing myself out there and people are into it. So it's really cool to be able to do what I love.
Handmade Songs sold well enough to reach the top 10 on a number of music charts. She followed that success with live performances at clubs in Los Angeles and by opening for larger acts like Jewel and Ed Sheeran. Recently, Kelly electrified audiences at the Billboard Music Awards with her performance of an acoustic version of her song Nobody Love. Then, at the BET Awards, her version of Smokey Robinson's Who's Lovin' You had R&B crooner John Legend tweeting that Kelly's was the vocal performance of the night. The singer-songwriter says that being within reach of her goal is amazing and something she dreamed of her whole life.
I think all the award shows I've done so far have just been so surreal. Like, I always dreamed about being on different award shows, just sitting at home on my couch and watching. And, I mean, I think just as a kid, I just always put myself on that stage. And the fact that it's actually happening, I get to be a part of these shows, is incredible.
Tori Kelly released her first full-length album, Unbreakable Smile, in June. Max Martin, who produces Kelly Clarkson, Pink, and Ellie Goulding, helped produce the CD, which debuted on the Billboard 200 at number 2. Her single, Should Have Been Us, is also rising on the Billboard Hot 100 charts. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Walking around with my head down, but I can't hide with these high heels on. Downtown in a thick crowd, but it's just you that my mind is on. Dressed up, got my heart messed up. You got yours and I got mine. It's unfair that I still care, and I wonder where you are tonight. Thinking it could be different, but maybe we mistake. Yeah, thinking it could be different. It could, it could. It should have been.
That is the music of Tori Kelly. And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us and have a great weekend.
I still got a little flame for you, even though you drove me mad. Now and then I pretend that it's you when I close my eyes. You got yours, I got mine, but I wonder where you are tonight. It should have been.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burundi's controversial presidential election is over, but the political crisis there continues following the National Electoral Commission's announcement that President Pierre Nkurunziza has won with over 69% of the vote. The balloting and electoral process have been broadly criticized as non-credible by the East African community and international partners, including President Obama during his recent visit to Kenya. The election, which was boycotted by opposition parties in protest of President Nkurunziza's intent to run for a third term, and the government's efforts to close media outlets and shut down political space, leaves the East African nation divided and in the throes of continued political turmoil. Many have criticized the government for violating democratic norms and for going forward with the voting despite the clear absence of conditions necessary for credible elections. The opposition says the president's re-election bid violated the Arusha Agreement, which ended Burundi's devastating civil war and remains the bedrock of the country's fragile stability. Major donors have suspended assistance and threatened to impose sanctions in response to the discredited electoral process and to hold accountable those responsible for human rights abuses. The commission's announcement on the electoral results culminates a deeply flawed electoral process, one marked by violence and a disregard for the civil and human rights of the citizens of Burundi. The United States is deeply disappointed by President Nkurunziza's violation of the Arusha Agreement and use of undemocratic means to maintain power through an electoral process that was neither credible nor legitimate. Moving forward, it is imperative that the government of Burundi re-engage in a meaningful, serious dialogue with opposition and civil society leaders to reach a consensus on how Burundi may regain the trust and confidence of its citizens and the international community and prevent even greater instability, economic collapse, refugee flows, and violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.